May it please the court, I'm Scott Micklejohn. I'm hearing on behalf of the appellants and the father in the underlying proceeding. This is kind of a difficult case because, you know, at the outset, we accept the fact that we have a very difficult burden overcoming the factual findings of a district court. That this court would apply the clearly erroneous standards to those findings, and that that's a difficult burden for us to overcome. However, that has to be compared against the fact that we're also dealing with a fundamental right. You know, the right of the parent to raise their kids, to be involved with the raising of their kids. And as a result of that, the courts have always held that the trial court has to have strict compliance with the provisions of the statute for termination of any child's rights or the parent's rights with regard to the raising of their child. So what we're getting at here is, although there looks like there may be some factual evidence, I think that the court can find in this matter that there's insufficient, you know, review of the statutory criteria to warrant the termination of the parental rights as to the father, and that as a result of that, this court should reverse and remand the case back for further proceedings. Here's the facts of this case. We're dealing with a situation of a mother and father where the mother has a very severe, significant alcohol and drug problem. One that she's been grappling with for quite some time, one that she's been having difficulty finding and maintaining any continuous sobriety. The case starts out basically back in 2006. In that time, the mother was found passed out with the children. The police were called, and the dependency neglect proceeding was begun. Later on that same year, the mother was again found passed out with the children, and everybody agrees that during these two events in 2006, the father wasn't responsible because he wasn't around. He was incarcerated, and therefore he could not have had any impact on the mother's behavior with the children.
So you would agree there was a problem when she had custody or supervision?
Absolutely. And she still had a problem, I think, today.
But isn't that the problem in this case, as far as your client goes? Isn't that what the judge looked at?
Well, I believe so, yes, but I think that we have to look at the timing of this situation and what had been going on. It was clear that the mother had a problem with alcohol. By the 2007 case, you know, when the mother was also awarded, the father had finally gotten custody of the children. Between 2007 and 2009, there were clearly more problems with the mother drinking, the mother, him calling the police, him calling friends and things like that to try and control her alcoholism, which again is a fruitless endeavor on his part, but he's trying. He's trying to keep a family together. He's trying to keep this relationship going.
Well, now, this is where I want to stop you, because you say that's a fruitless endeavor. Help me understand the record. I understood the department to try to say, you took issue, I guess, with the nature of whatever therapy or whatever it is, but the dad has responsibility to protect. And if he leaves a child with a mother who will not protect, isn't that his problem and his need to work on, to understand the safety boundaries, those kinds of things?
Absolutely. But I think when you look at the record in this matter, the father clearly was doing that. So, you know,
but clearly, did they require or obligate him to take I don't know what it was called, but some sort of therapy or class that would teach those boundaries?
Yes, they did.
And did he participate in that?
He did initially.
Well, but he didn't follow through.
Correct.
And that seems to me to be the heart of the problem as the trial judge looked at it.
Well, but that's only one of the three-part tests.
Okay.
Okay, so I think that the record is probably sufficient from the trial court standing that she could find that there was a reasonable treatment plan in place, and that he failed to meet that treatment program. And the court goes to great extents or great lengths to talk about the problems he was having with the department and that treatment plan and the anger and the issues that had come up around all of that. But still, after you find that, you know, with the treatment plan, you have to find that there's no improvement or not improvement that's rapid enough, and you have to find that, you know, he's still an unfit parent. So the July event comes in where the father leaves for work early and again leaves the mother at home alone with the kids. She then gets drunk, which then re-brings up the case. We then have, you know, the second situation where we create the treatment plan. Then the treatment plan gets into place. He starts working with that. And then we have the next incident, which is the November 2009 incident. And in that case, the father goes to some pretty heroic extremes. First of all, he leaves the kids with an adult child of his, who's already been approved by the Department of Social Services to do visitation with the kids and to supervise visitation.
How old is she? How old is this adult child?
I don't recall offhand. She's an adult, though. And the so at this point, left with a responsible adult while he had to go to work at another location. He did not leave the kids at home. He left the kids at his dad's home, at the grandparents'. Somehow, the mother, by mere happenstance, shows up at the father's house, talks to the daughter, the adult child that's there watching, the adult daughter that's watching the kids, convinces them it's okay for her to watch them, and then we have the last incident. After that incident, the kids are taken away. He has no further involvement. So we're talking about one incident here, after the treatment plan, that's in the record, that talks about why it is that...
Well, let me stop you again. You said he has no further involvement. Did the department and or guardian ad litem prohibit contact with the kids from that point on?
No, but he had supervised visitation. They were put in
Okay, so he was afforded supervised visitation. Did he take advantage of those opportunities?
Yes, the record shows...
Fully.
That he was a very loving parent, that he was taking advantage of his rights to work with the kids, that he was very, very, you know, involved in trying to work out treatment for the kids. One of the children is developmentally disabled, and so he was working to try to get the appropriate treatment for that. And the record, the court admits in this case that he is a very loving father, that is not a dispute here, that's not a question. So we're talking about after the treatment plan is in place, and he's having problems on the treatment plan, there's only one incident that's in the record that where the mother somehow gets, again, control of the kids and has a drinking episode. So what we're talking about here is that, you know, sufficient for the court to make a finding when you're going to terminate a fundamental constitutional right like this? And, you know, we suggest that that's not, that he was taking greater and greater efforts every time that he was dealing with the mother and her alcohol problem, that at the stage of the hearing, he admitted that he could not have a relationship with her any longer, wanted the relationship terminated, you know, that he understood that he couldn't do that, that she could have no involvement with the kids. But he's never really had an opportunity to show that or to prove that or to be able to go forward with that, because at this hearing, his parental rights were terminated, and then that's been the end of the discussion.
Now, he did have, I'll use the word animosity toward the department.
Clearly.
For a portion of this case. What relevance is there to that in a termination proceeding?
Well, again, I'm going to assign the relevance that the trial judge assigned to it. And in that situation, she said that that was evidence that a further treatment plan probably wouldn't be successful, that his animosity with the department would mean that he could not complete a treatment plan, an amended treatment plan, or a further treatment plan.
Because he had given up working with the department at some point.
Well, at least just that there was enough animosity there that it probably wouldn't be fruitful. But again, that's only one of three parts of this test. You know, it's pretty clear that he had, you know, been taking greater and greater measures all through this process to try and keep the kids away from the mother. You know, at first he tried to control her drinking, and that goes to no avail. We understand that. But then he also then tried to do things that he could to keep the mother away from the kids. And, you know, again, the one heroic measure that we have, where he took the kids to his dad's house, left them with another adult while he had to go to work, failed only because of the fact that the mother showed up and cajoled the adult that was there to allow her to watch the kids.
And the adult child left.
Right.
The adult child left the father's house, left the mother with the kids. Had he instructed the adult child that the mother's not supposed to be with these kids and don't leave them alone? Was there any evidence of that in the record?
No, we accept that that may have been a failure on his part to have not made that very clear. But again, he had taken what he could by taking the kids out of the home where the mother may show up and taking them to a grandparent's home. You know, to some place, to a third location where, you know, that wasn't hopefully going to be an issue.
How long had this case been going on?
Well, again, the record here reflects back to the 2006 and the previous DNN case that was filed. So it's been going on since that time with her drug and alcohol problems.
But what point and or what level does the trial judge say enough's enough?
Well, the judge has to make the specific findings that, you know, there is no sign of improvement on the part of the father, and it's not likely to happen within a reasonable time. The question is, how do you make that finding when you have a treatment plan that was put into place, that the father cooperated enthusiastically at first, but then developed animosity, but still at the same time, his behavior showed that he was doing everything he could to keep the mother away from the kids, and the one incident they had was a pretty heroic incident. It's pretty unforeseeable that the mother was going to show up and take the kids in that situation. And using that then to terminate the parental rights, you know, that's a bit of a stretch to say that that was sufficient evidence to say that there was no improvement on the part of the father. And again, it's, you know, the department, the state that has the burden of proof in this to show that he's unfit, that he can't do this. And so on the other side of it, we still have the opportunity to say that there was at least, onerous, you know, plan that could have been put into place, something less drastic. Once you've terminated the mother's rights altogether, give the father another chance now to see if he can keep the mother out of the kid's life with that additional tool. And that's not been tried. So if there's something less drastic, the court has to consider that and to apply it if it's reasonable. And in this case, I think it would have been.
Father had never sought an APR or any kind of protection against the mother, some kind of limitation on the mother's parental visitation. He never did anything like that, did he?
No, he never filed for a protective order specifically right. against her or anything else. He was calling the police during the times that he was having difficulty with her.
Was there a dissolution action at some point? Were there a divorce case going on, paternity case or something?
Not that I'm aware of. But at this point, the father has made it clear that he has no intention of having any further relationship with the mother, but that's now terminated. And with that, I'll reserve the rest of my time. There's just further questions.
I do have one question. You raise this issue of a restraining order, and you ask us to extend the appeal to address the restraining order. Now, what case was that? That was a completely separate case than this DNA
right,
case.
Right, that was a separate case, and it's really kind of just a, you know, a lawyer's type argument, because what happened was the court was there hearing the case on the termination of the parental rights, realized that she also had set on the docket the restraining order issue that was brought by the mother, and then went ahead and made that order permanent without actually having that hearing before her, without calling up that case specifically. And so the question is whether or not the father was given appropriate due process to be able to hear and to respond to that restraining order, because he's worried that it could have other consequences on him. Not that he's intending to see the mother again, but he's just worried about other potential legal consequences.
So, but that was entered in a different case, different case number, right?
Correct.
Was there an appeal in that case from that order?
No.
And that order in the other case was not entered in this case?
Well, it was part of the written findings that the court had in this case. It was, you know, at the end of her order. So.
But as an order?
No, not that I'm aware of.
You have about
three. Thank you, Jeff.
Good morning. My name is Deborah Kirshner, and I represent the Adams County Department of Human Services, both as the appellant and the petitioner in the underlying case. I'd like to actually answer a couple of the questions that the panel raised during the initial argument. The daughter was 23 years old, and the restraining order was consolidated, if you will, into the dependency and neglect proceedings and had been heard by the same judicial officer at the same time under a separate case number, which I don't have with me immediately, but had been set. There had been, I believe, on the 20th of September, a temporary restraining order entered on behalf of the mother in this case because of some threatening letters which were introduced into evidence at the termination hearing, and it was set to be heard at the same time as the termination hearing, since all parties would be heard in court.
Other present at the
She was not present at the termination hearing.
She represented.
She was represented at the termination hearing.
Buried he heard.
The court simply entered an order because it had been set that day, found that she had heard sufficient evidence during the pendency of the testimony to make that a permanent restraining order.
But during the testimony of the termination hearing?
Correct. Okay. That is correct. And To some extent, petitioner doesn't have a real position on the issue of whether the restraining order should continue or not. However, it is telling that this is an issue that Father brings up at his appeal. I noted in doing research in the Lassiter case, there was a footnote which is somewhat similar to what we have going on in this case. Ms. Lassiter's argument here that her mother should have been given custody of William is hardly consistent with her argument in the collateral attack on her murder conviction that she was innocent because her mother was guilty. In this case, Father argues that a less drastic alternative would be to terminate mother's parental rights, and that would give him the clout, if you will, that he needs to keep mother away from the children. An APR was filed in the 2006 case on behalf of father. That did not proceed because the parents reconciled. The case was closed after the birth of the second child, CC. I believe it was closed in January of 2008. Mother had been maintaining sobriety. She had successfully, at the time it appeared successfully, completed a residential treatment center through the Aspen Center, and the family indicated that they planned to parent these children together, and that allocation of parental responsibilities did not proceed.
If I could interrupt you,
yes,
the guardian ad litem did not enter an appearance at the appellate level, is that right?
I believe she filed a statement joining with the position of appellant.
Of appellant?
I'm sorry, appellee.
Okay.
We are aligned in this proceeding. What we have here are two very young children who have been involved with the Department of Social Services for at least half of their lives. We have children who are in need of permanence, and they are in need of permanence in a home where they can be safe and protected. Father cannot protect these children. His position is that this case was filed because of mother's issues. She's a severe alcoholic. That the issues to be determined here are whether the treatment plan was appropriate, whether there are less drastic alternatives to termination of the parental rights, whether he is an unfit parent, and the issue of the permanent restraining order. I think that counsel has described the background information. We have a situation where we have numerous police contacts. Those were testified to at length during the termination proceedings. Many of those police contacts were initiated by father to call because he was concerned about mother's behavior with the children. Yet he leaves the children with their mother time and time again. He stated in his testimony that everyone was aware of mother's issues. He talks in his testimony about the things he put in place to protect the children, to make sure that she wasn't drinking, that he engaged the help of his family. He took her picture to liquor stores in the area, begging them not to sell her alcohol. When he left the children with her, he would have people call and listen on speakerphone to determine if her voice sounded like she had been drinking. He wouldn't leave her any money. Somehow, specifically on that date in July 2009, when this case was filed, he left the house at 7:30 in the morning to go work for a few hours, knowing that she had had a drinking episode several days before, but left the children in her care. Sometime between 7:30 in the morning and approximately noon, mother obtained alcohol and was found passed out on a busy street in Adams County with her two young children in her care. Passerby called the police. The police called father. He came and picked up the children. Parents do have a fundamental liberty interest in the care and custody of their children. We do not dispute that. That is both federal law and Colorado state law. The state also has a compelling interest, however, in making sure that children are in safe and suitable homes.
Sorry to interrupt again. The animosity issue, the question, what significance does that play here?
The animosity between father and the Department of Social Services? I'm sure it would not surprise you to know that we frequently deal with parents who harbor no good feelings toward the Department of Social Services. This is a daily event. The animosity in this case, the record has recordings of some of the phone calls which were made to the Department of Social Services, to caseworkers, from Father. I think it's quite clear that the animosity was...
Well, and that was played to the judge at the termination?
It was, Your Honor.
So describe that a little bit.
The phone calls, the ones that were played at the termination hearing,
yes,
were left on caseworker David Gregg's telephone in the evening, late night, early morning hours, after business hours, specifically after an event in which there had been a visit, supervised visit, and Father was unhappy with the way that some intervention had taken place. The caseworker believed that inappropriate comments were being made to the children, intervened in the visit. There was an argument, and at that point, things deteriorated rapidly. Later, and police were involved. A series of phone calls came in, including one where the caseworker felt particularly threatened and was worried that perhaps Father would do something to harm himself.
From that visit or from the phone call?
From the phone calls, as a result of the visit. He called the police, and the police went to do a welfare check on Father. Later that evening, a series of extremely profane and somewhat threatening phone messages were left on Mr. Gregg's voicemail. At that point, Mr. Gregg did make a police report. Father was charged with harassment, and two of the caseworkers in the case, one had already been replaced because it was quite clear that Father did not respect her opinion, could not work with her. Mr. Gregg came on the case. After this incident, Mr. Gregg was replaced with another caseworker, and there was a court order that all communication between Father and the Department of Social Services be through counsel.
It's happened approximately?
I believe that February of 2010, I believe. And I know that in February of 2010, a motion to suspend visitation was requested because of Father's escalated demeanor and his appearance. The court at that point amended the treatment plan in addition to the child protection therapy to ask for a hair test for possible substance abuse, as well as a mental health assessment. Because it was feared that the level of his agitation was beyond normal distaste for the Department of Social Services. He had a history in the distant past of having abused drugs, and some of his presentation was consistent with perhaps
so
abuse of drugs.
Was that then an order entered as part of the treatment plan leading up to this termination?
Yes, it was originally ordered at a review hearing in January to do the mental health assessment and to
do. And was he present at that hearing?
He was. He was present. He, I believe, relieved his counsel of representing him at that hearing. If I remember correctly, counsel was present through the hearing, but then was relieved, and he, at the next hearing, came back with private counsel. The motion to suspend, done in February, was done partially because he had not complied with the request to do the hair test or the mental health assessment.
Did he ever comply with that?
He did the hair test, and he did the mental health assessment in mid-March, I think the day after he was served with a contempt citation to show cause why he had not yet complied with those court orders. The hair test came back clean, and the mental health assessment had to be updated because at the time it was done, he did not indicate the level of animosity between the department, the types of messages he had left, etc. When that was updated and that information was provided to the evaluator did see it as a factor, and he did recommend full psychological testing, which had been a prior order of the court. If that was recommended through the mental health assessment, Father was to follow through with that. He did not follow through with doing a full psychological assessment, including testing. He was at all times required to do child protection therapy. This is a major issue of Father's. He doesn't recognize that as a scientifically established form of therapy. However, as the trial judge pointed out, that is what the child protection system is about.
Well, that's the difference between that and a label of a specific type of therapy? Is this a particular therapy?
At the Department of Social Services in Adams County, we have a team called the Internal Treatment Team. They do have a particular type of therapy, or therapeutic intervention, perhaps, would be a better term for it, where they assess the parent's ability to be a protective parent, and then work with that parent.
Is that part of the uniform risk assessment that's done? This is different.
This is done if requested by the caseworker. For example, in a case like this, where mother is the presenting problem, her alcoholism is what brings the case to the attention, but he has the responsibility to protect, and for whatever reason is unable to fulfill that responsibility, there's therapeutic intervention to work with him to determine what is it that he's missing or unable to provide for the children to protect them from the risk factor, which in this case was considered.
And the therapeutic intervention is done by licensed mental health professionals, or who does this?
It is done, there's a team who, some of them have masters in social work, some of them are licensed professional counselors, they all have extensive experience, they teach the nurturing parenting classes, which are the hands-on demonstrative classes, as well as lecture component in order to educate parents on how to nurture and protect their children. They do family therapy, they do some individual therapy.
This was ordered as part of the treatment plan by the court?
Yes, it was ordered.
When?
Day one, from the initial shelter hearing
in
August of 2009.
And it was, did he or did he not comply? I think his counsel said he partly complied. I think
he went to four sessions. He was unsuccessfully discharged. He disagreed completely with his need for this type of therapy, with the effectiveness of the therapy, and I believe stated that he only went because that's what he was expected to do. So he did not successfully complete that portion of the treatment plan. And although there is not an absolute rule for complete compliance with a treatment plan, partial or substantial compliance can be enough if it is effective and results in correcting the issues which brought the case in front of the court in the first place. And in this particular case, that did not happen. Over a year into the case, by the time of the treatment plan, we had minimal compliance with the treatment plan. We had no indication that there had been an improvement in the circumstances of the children concerning their parents, which initially brought the case. And in fact, it was worse. The department didn't have a wish to raise these children. We recognize that parents have the fundamental right to the care and control of their children, and there's an assumption under the law that a fit parent acts in the best interests of their children. That's at issue here. Is father a fit parent? And the testimony at the termination hearing indicated that father was not a fit parent, that he had no likelihood of changing his behavior or being able to protect these children within the reasonable future. And that was based not only on that case that was filed in 2009, but the case in 2006 and the chronic nature of father's problems.
November of 2009, that incident with the adult order.
Yes, sir.
The children were taken out of the house at that time, put into foster care?
They were, Your Honor. They were removed from the grandfather's home and put into foster care, where they have remained.
Then until the termination hearing, was the father allowed any visitation with these children?
He was until February of 2010.
And then?
At which time the court suspended his visitation until he completed the
health assessment.
Yes,
and
thank
the
you. And he had one further visit on July 2nd, I believe, as an assessment to see if there had been any improvement. Thank you very much.
Again, you know, I think that we have to look specifically at what the court's order was and where the court was directing her attention after hearing all the testimony. You know, and again, the court did find that the treatment plan was reasonable and was likely to succeed if it was followed through on. But clearly what the court said was the focus of the treatment plan was to find a better, not just a better, but an absolute plan for the father to protect his children and keep them safe, unfortunately, in this case, primarily from their mother. The whole issue here is not about the father's ability to parent and him being a good parent, other than him keeping the kids from the mother. That's it. That's the heart of this thing. And so, you know, but for the mother's involvement with drugs and alcohol, there would be no intervention here. There would be no issues. You know, this would not be a problem for the father or anything else. So, again, she goes on, the court goes on to note, it's not your, talking to the father's, substance abuse or mental illness, but rather it's their mother's, and you're living with them with an unsafe and inappropriate caretaker. You know, that's what we're talking about. That's what the court was focused on. That's what we need to be focused on here today. And again, what we're talking about is the fact that there was a treatment plan. Sure, he may not have complied with it because of the animosity, but there was improvement. Clearly, he was changing his behaviors. Clearly, he was doing what he could to keep the mother away. That failed on one instance. And then as a result of that, now we've made a determination that there's absolutely no likelihood that he's going to continue to improve. That's where the difficulty lies here. Without any other attempt to try a less drastic alternative, i.e. terminate the mother's rights and then let the father try to raise the kids on his own now, we've taken the drastic step of terminating his fundamental constitutional right of the right to bear his, or the right to, you know, father his children and to rear them in the way that he sees fit. That's what the problem is here. You know, the real question is, could there be considered to be substantial evidence in the record when you have a single incident in the record that really shows that the father was unable to keep the mother away? And again, we can talk about his demeanor, we can talk about issues that he had, but again, the court clearly said that it wasn't, he didn't have a drug problem, it wasn't his drug issues that were at risk here, it wasn't how he treated the kids or whether he loved the kids, it was clear that he did. The problem was, is that unfortunately he was trying to maintain a relationship with the mother, and, you know, that's one of those things that's unfortunate, but it happens in our society. It's, you know, dealing with alcoholics is a frustrating and difficult problem. She showed signs that she was going to be improving. We can't fault him for trying to maintain some sort of relationship with women he loves when she was showing signs before that she was improving. As a result of that now, he made the, you know, one mistake of leaving the kids at home alone. That re-brought up the case. Then there was only the second incident where he took the kids to his parents' house, left them with another adult, and she somehow showed up. I tender to you that that's not sufficient for them to terminate his parental rights because there's no evidence that he wasn't improving. He was. All the evidence suggests that he was.
The argument is that the only basis for finding him unfit was that he could not protect these children from their mother.
Well, that's not specifically my argument. That's what the trial court was finding in her order, was that that was the only reason for this process.
The treatment plan was an attempt to get him to adopt behavior that would have helped him protect from the mother, yet he didn't complete the treatment plan. So don't those really tie together as part of the unfitness finding?
I see my time is up here.
Yes, go ahead.
Although the treatment plan wasn't completed, we also have to look at whether or not his behavior improved. And his behavior did change. He was taking additional efforts and more strenuous efforts to keep the mother away. He was responding to the notice that the mother was not fit. You know, by the fact that he had, you know, before he had done everything he could before the treatment plan, but then even more after the treatment plan was in place, he took the step of giving the kids to another party in another location to keep the mother away. You know, he's taking greater and greater efforts every time. Now, you know, again, we can sit back and say, well, you didn't seek a protective order, you know, you didn't do this. He was doing what he could when he could. It's, you know, you're in the heat of the situation. You're trying to deal with the situation. You know, nobody's perfect. And again, the courts realize that simply because you're not a model parent and simply because you didn't do everything right isn't sufficient to terminate your parental rights.
Thank you, counsel. You've done excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted and a written opinion will issue in due course.